Hey, Cinemaholics people, it's John Negroni, your old pal. So here's the situation. I'm not in this episode. You're not going to hear my voice after this. Sorry about that. But we got a little bit of a problem. I'm going to tell you at the forefront. Okay, so Will Ashton, your favorite film critic of all time, he did this whole thing. We're so proud of him. He did the whole movie review with special guest Isaac Feldberg. That's coming up in a second. However, you're going to notice immediately that there are some audio problems. I know. Nobody likes audio problems. They're the worst. It's not his fault. We did have backups. The problem is when you do the backups and there are audio issues, we weren't able to fix the audio issues as we normally do. We have audio issues all the time, but technology is so great. We usually just erase them and you're none the wiser. You're going to get a pretty raw Cinemaholics cut. Think of it as Cinemaholics uncut, cut at least that I'm cut from it because I'm not there. So that is what you're about to listen to. There's going to be like sound effects. Hey, look, you're going to hear some background noise. We apologize, but hey, let yourself get immersed in the background noise. It might be kind of fun. You know, you hear a car coming, you know, don't get scared. It's not coming for you. That's happening just in the podcast. So I hope that all makes sense. Hope you're comfortable. I'm going to leave you be. Here are the boys. They're going to talk about a movie called Antlers. Let's see how they do.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special bonus episode of Cinemaholics. As you can probably tell, I'm not John Negroni. Actually, not here. He didn't have a chance to see the film that we're going to be discussing, but that's fine. We'll be back on the main episode talking about something or another. I can't even keep up anymore with what's coming up, unfortunately. But that's all right, because this week we're talking about Antlers, the new Scott Cooper film that just came out this past week. And we have a special guest. He was previously on our Wrath of Man bonus episode, and now he's here to discuss another film without the two main Cinemaholics, but he is a freelance critic, writer, and editor. You've seen his work at Inverse, Pace, and Roger.com. It's Isaac Feldberg. Hi, Isaac.
Hey, Will. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, I'm just... we'll get you, me, and John together. I don't know why we can't get the three of us on one episode, unfortunately, but that's going to happen someday, I promise.
Well, third time will be the charm. I just take you one at a time. This is my initiation still.
Yes. But yeah, so like I said at the top, we're going to be talking about Antlers, which as we were discussing a little bit off the air, comes from a somewhat contentious filmmaker and writer-director. His name, as I mentioned, Scott Cooper. He made Crazy Heart. He made Out of the Furnace. Black Mass, Hostels, and is that all of them, or am I forgetting one?
I think you've got all of them there.
Yeah.
Crazy Heart was his debut,
right?
And he's just been since, I feel.
Yeah, because Crazy Heart, that led obviously to Jeff Bridges' Oscar win, so I think that's probably the most notable or most famous, and he was obviously an actor before that, and then he kind of came into writing as a second phase of his career, but as we were discussing a little bit, it seems like people weirdly have somewhat contentious feelings about him or his filmography, at least. So I wanted to ask you briefly before we start our conversation on the film, his other films, have you seen the other ones, for instance?
I have. Yeah,
okay.
I have. I've seen, Crazy Heart, Out of the Furnace, Black Mass, and Hostels, and
okay.
Antlers. So I've seen a lot of them, and, you know, I think I understand the criticism of Scott Cooper. From what I've gathered, is to feel a little bit less positively towards Cooper. There's a sort of pretension that they sense in his focus on these very kind of dread-steeped, very like ominous depictions of the American heartland. I think he has a very pessimistic and a very gloomy sensibility. And I think that, you know, when you're naming, like, for example, as he has, like, Tom Wolfe and William Faulkner as your main influences as a filmmaker, people are going to take the piss out of you a little bit. And so I think that, you know, there has been a lot of people who are just generally not really buying what he's selling in that way and not really sure that he is someone who kind of telling, you know, these stories for the right reason. It's trafficking in some degree or another to in poverty porn, to put it bluntly. How about you, Will? I mean, what was your familiarity with Cooper before Antlers, and how do you kind of feel about him?
Yeah, I mean, I think like a lot of people, my familiarity began with Crazy Heart. I remember just the award season leading up to that, with Jip is finally getting recognized. It was like, oh, okay, finally, like this. I feel like Crazy Heart wasn't so much like his best performance, but it was like finally Jeff Bridges getting recognized for, you know, 4 or 5 decades. And it's like, okay, this isn't going to be the movie he's remembered for, but it's the well-deserved Oscar, because I think he is very good in that film. And I think generally speaking, Scott Cooper is good with actors. I mean, obviously he's formed a strong working relationship with Christian Bale. I think he gets good performances from Kerry Russell and Jesse Plemons in this film. And like I said, I think he does strive to do a lot in his films. Like I don't think he's ever lacking ambition or what he wants to say in his films. If anything, I think he just tries too much at once, and he just never quite reaches his heights, which I don't think is the worst thing for a filmmaker. I don't know. Like I feel like I'd rather see someone try to do too much than just like kind of like wallow in darkness for no particular reason. Like I never got the sense that he's like tackling these topics insincerely, but I do kind of get the sense that like he doesn't quite reach the depths that he ever wants to strive for.
It's interesting. You know, I think that, and you know, we're talking about Antlers, which is his first flat out horror film. I feel like his past films, you know, he's made like a musical drama, or like a movie about musicians in Crazy Heart, a Rust Belt movie. He's made a gangster biopic and a Western. And so he's playing in different genres of all of the films that he's doing. But I do feel like, you know, there's not to kind of auteur him up or anything, because I agree that I don't think he's someone who is really warranting that yet. But there's a certain sensibility to his vision that is pretty non-commercial and pretty increasingly at odds, I think, with a lot of the gigs he's being hired for. I mean, if, you know, you're talking about how to sell a horror movie, making like an extended, despairing portrait of American decay and industrial strife, like, you know, having that skeleton for a movie is not the thing that's going to make people go to theaters in October for Halloween. And, you know, that was kind of the thing that Antlers ended up being, was this kind of push and pull, I think, between the studio, which of course is Searchlights at Disney owned. So they have, you know, they have absolutely no fucking idea what to do with a horror movie to begin with. But like, you know, then to have one that has this very pessimistic, very dark, almost nihilistic bent to it in terms of its depiction of its setting of the United States, this very dilapidated corner of Oregon that the film is set in. You've got this this director who I think is kind of increasingly going in a less commercial direction the more success he has and the bigger projects he's working on, which, you know, I wonder if that will continue after Antlers, and if he is going to keep getting these bigger roles, or if he will retreat a bit into independent film if he's committed to this grunginess that he likes to bring.
Yeah, I saw that. I think his next film is actually filming around where I live, and it's going to be like another Christian Bale film where I think he plays Edgar Allan Poe during his like time in the army or something like that. So I'm not quite sure what that's going to be, but definitely, I mean, seems like, I mean, obviously, I think as an actor, he's made a lot of good connections. I think he knows like how to work, like I said, with actors well. But yeah, his odds with the studio are definitely seeming to be becoming more apparent. And I do agree with you in that with this film in particular, whenever I did see Mark, it was promoting more as like a Guillermo del Toro production, not like a Scott Cooper joint, or, you know, like even like David S. Goyer's influence as a producer here feels sometimes more apparent than what Scott Cooper wants to bring to it. And you were mentioning to an interview at Inverse for like this movie to talk about Scott Cooper's, I guess, what he wanted to say. And you were telling me that I guess he seems to be feeling pretty contentious about how it ultimately turned out.
Yeah. I mean, do you think your listeners want a little bit of backstory on Antlers, like the story of it, what the film is kind of focusing on in terms of that? I just feel like in discussing Antlers, I think for those who have seen it, which judging by the box office numbers is not quite too many of you.
Right.
But you know, for those who haven't, Antlers is, as we've mentioned, set in this very small corner of Oregon where factories have closed. The landscape is decaying. There's industrial rot that's set in to the surroundings. The film focuses on a school teacher who's played by Kerry Russell from The Americans, who becomes aware that one of her pupils, played by Jeremy T. Thomas, he's a middle schooler, is exhibiting symptoms of abuse at home. And as she looks into this case of this kid, whose name is Lucas, she stumbles into something that she doesn't really understand, that Lucas doesn't really understand either, which is that his father, who is a meth cook, and his younger brother, who has been, it's implied, kind of ferrying drugs for him and acting as something of a mule as a young kid, they have both been attacked and changed in some way by this creature that they encountered in an abandoned mine shaft on the end of town. And as a result, they are kind of locked in his attic at home. Lucas is kind of taking care of the family, but they are transforming in these hideous, creepy creature feature ways. And so the film becomes this race, kind of in absence of information, of Kerry Russell trying to figure out what's going on at home for Lucas, and also reckon with the ways this stirs up feelings of the abuse that she has suffered earlier in life as a child, which had led her to leave town previously. She's only returned recently and is separately navigating restoring a relationship of sorts with her brother, who's played by Jesse Plemons and has become the town sheriff, and is fighting addictions in his own ways. And so, you know, you've got this setup that is a very dark, but also a very modern and grounded setup for a horror film, which is that it is looking at abuse, it is looking at environmental decay, it is looking at this kind of broken corner of the country and the people who live there, who in the film's very grim worldview are broken as well from having been there too long and not being able to leave and kind of being left to languish and die with everyone else and with the landscape that's been ravaged at this point. And so you have this very Cooperian setup for the horror film. And then at about the hour mark, you kind of realize it's like this is a Guillermo del Toro produced film, and the film seems to realize that as well, and kind of changes gears from this very slow burning, very atmospheric setup into more of a straightforward creature feature. By which I mean that, you know, the titular Antlers, though, you know, he is never called Mr. Antlers, unfortunately, but the
if only
the movie that I would have written, Mr. Antlers, but you know, he certainly, that the creature, the titular creature in the movie, the bearer of those antlers is revealed to be a spirit with ties to Algonquin folklore, called a Wendigo. And I won't kind of spoil the ending or anything, but, that creature is revealed to be causing havoc in this little town. And the film kind of pivots its focus a bit to having like set up these characters as being haunted in their own ways to being potential victims or, you know, the only people who can stop the Wendigo from what it's doing, which is just kind of rampaging in pursuit of Lucas. And so the film has this kind of this gear shift at the hour mark that makes it clear that this is a film that has a few different creative visions kind of working alongside each other and not necessarily lifting each other up. I'm kind of critical of the film. There've been people who are more positive. There've been people who are more negative. To me, it felt going into this interview that you mentioned that I did with Scott Cooper, like a film that had been trimmed down and kind of workshopped a bit in post to become something that could be released by Searchlight Pictures. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, Cooper has really deep ties at Searchlight. Like, they released Crazy Heart way back when, and, like, that was the movie that kind of made him, and it was a huge movie for them, too. He's got, you know, respect there, but it is interesting that in the changes, it feels like this became more of a Del Toro film than a Scott Cooper film, especially in terms of the runtime, which is a very trim 99 minutes, which is an interesting thing, you know. And I put this question to him directly, that it is difficult to make an atmospheric Rust Belt drama that is also a creature feature and that is also 99 minutes while feeling like a slow burn. And he was kind of like, yeah, I mean, it was tough. It was a tricky movie. It was a tricky line to thread. And I think parts of it work. He was not, you know, the best advocate, I would say, for the studio cut of the film that has been released. And he did confirm to me that there was at one point a much longer version of the movie that, among other things, brought in a more stated native perspective on the myth of the Wendigo. Which was said to be a focus for the production while they were making this, to do like a more authentic version of Native folklore and not just be appropriating it. Part of that was the casting of a First Nations actor named Graham Greene as a retired sheriff who comes in and has information about the Wendigo. In the studio cut that I saw, Greene is in maybe 10 minutes of the movie that he has two scenes. His scenes were part of what was whittled down in the production process. And one thing that Cooper said is that the version that he had kind of wanted to make had a lot more kind of intense kind of discussion of Wendigo lore, of the setting, and of kind of the themes of abuse and kind of cyclical harm that the movie is looking at, both in terms of the environmental damage that's done to the setting and the physical and emotional damage that's done to the characters. So yeah, I mean, and sorry, that was a rant, but no, just good. to give you the context on that, that's kind of why it feels to me like it feels a bit clotheslined between two different creative visions.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I should mention real quick, this is also based on a short story that the co-screenwriter Nick Acosta wrote called The Quiet Boy. But yeah, watching the film, I get the sense, like, and I mean, I was obviously wasn't there when they were making it. I get the sense that Guillermo del Toro is more interested in like the like kind of mythology and building up the lore and kind of like the sense of dread and the metaphor of the premise. And Scott Cooper is more interested in building character and this kind of like this town as this rotting place. And as you mentioned, the mythology as well with the Native American perspective, which I'm very critical of because, like you said, it plays a fairly small part of the film. And there's this sense of like, are they like outsiders kind of appropriating this? And it sounds like I'm very intrigued to hear that he was actually much more thoughtful and willing to explore that. But the studio seemed to push away from that because I feel like that's been one of the biggest and most notable criticisms of the film is that isn't really explored or seen well, especially given that the movie primarily focuses on white characters. But yeah, I mean, for me, I think the reason I don't want to dismiss the film is because Scott Cooper as a filmmaker, at least here, I can get that sense, like you said, the part of it where he is so innately don't get the sense when he does focus on poor Rust Belt characters. Like, I don't get the sense that he's like fetishizing it just for any like kind of commercial gain. Like, he's not just doing it to like, and for me to tell this type of story, it's easy sympathy or something like that. I get the sense that he really does care about these characters and he really wants to explore them. But like you said, there is that kind of push and pull where he is primarily working in the studio system, working as independent filmmaker in that sense. And he can only really do so much either due to his own limitations as a filmmaker or what he can really do in this landscape. But yeah, at the same time, I feel like the fact that he is willing to explore that and devotes enough time, slow, methodical pace to not make them feel like overly rushed or unexamined does ultimately make it, I think, a deeper text. And I think some critics have allowed it fact that it isn't able to really feel breathed or lived in does prevent it from being a fulfilling or really meaningful film at the same time.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I mentioned Searchlight earlier because this is one of those films that Disney inherited from the old Searchlight before, like when they bought Fox.
Right.
And so to me, it feels like a Fox movie that Disney didn't really know what to do with. And, absolutely. And you know, I definitely think that they kind of put it on a slow death march by releasing it in theaters with very minimal promotion. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a movie that was being advertised 2 years ago.
Yes.
And it certainly, you know, was not, I think, sufficiently ramped up to its theatrical release. The refrain that I heard from most people who I've spoken with the film about is, oh, I didn't even realize that was out. You know, mm-hmm. like, because, you know, it certainly... It got like a little bit of a last minute ad push, but I don't think it was really buzzed up in the way that would befit something that had been teased as this grand kind of follow up from Del Toro, who, lest we forget, was coming straight off of, you know, winning Best Picture for The Shape of Water. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having like that prestige is like suddenly an Oscar minted director who is coming into his own. I think that it makes a lot of sense that the studio wanted more Del Toro than they did Cooper while making the film. But I do think as well, they kind of stabbed both of them in the back a bit with this release strategy for it, or, you know, at least treated it like an afterthought, if to be a little bit less dramatic about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a shame, but, you know, it's also, you know, watching the studio cut, you do wonder what could have been with this, because we're talking about different sensibilities here. But at the same time, you know, I think that Del Toro is also someone who really does value atmosphere and does have this appreciation for place and time. I think, you know, like Shape of Water was a period piece, so is Pan's Labyrinth in its way, in this fairy tale kind of reimagining that it's doing. Hellboy is a whole world that is being created in those two films that he made. And I think that, you know, in terms of him resonating with Cooper, I think that the sense of place is what comes through most strongly in the film. And I'm sure that's one of the things that they were most aligned on. I think in terms of the sense of a story there, you know, Antlers is pretty flawed because it feels like it's caught between trying to be scary, trying to be atmospheric, and trying to be punchy. Which are like, you know, those are things that I think
you just can't be all those at once. Yeah,
it's a tough balance to strike. It's a really tough balance to strike, and I don't think the film quite succeeds in it. I do think it, you know, it is interesting to me that Cooper was drawn to this story. I think because of the themes of abuse in it, and because of the setting, and because of like the environmental and economic kind of factors of the setting. But to me, you know, I think, and this is also probably projecting a little bit, but, you know, he didn't seem very happy during the interview that I did with him for Inverse. He didn't seem to really, I'm not going to say anything that's like too conclusive about that, but you know, I got the sense from Scott Cooper in his discussions of the film that there was a version of this film he would have been happier with to put into theaters, and that this collaboration with Del Toro was maybe less than a 50-50 split. And certainly, you know, was affected just from them working within a studio that had other kind of plans for the movie. Though I do think it's interesting that, you know, Disney since kind of picking up these Searchlight picture films, and same with 20th Century, either, you know, I don't think it's as simple as being out of spite about not wanting to kind of be associated with things that would have previously been Fox. I think it's truly out of just kind of a lack of understanding of how to access the audience that would have gone to these movies, like both Antlers and The Last Duel recently, which, you know, I was just saying I saw last night, and that's a 20th Century film. Feel like they were kind of dropped into theaters so that something was playing, not really to make money. And both of them have been box office disappointments. And that, you know, in the case of Antlers, where it's a movie that seems like it was trimmed down and kind of pushed and reworked into this 99-minute October Halloween primed horror film rollout, you know, it makes the whole thing just feel a little more frustrating to me, because it's like, so you're gonna completely cut this down into like some more kind of sanitized studio version, and then you're not even gonna promote it like it's a studio release. Like, it's like it didn't make money for them either way. So it is more frustrating to me that there is this kind of shift where it just, you know, it seems like no one really left this project super happy with the final cut, which is always a shame.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this is a compromise film, you know, whether it be compromised as far as like what Guillermo del Toro wanted to do or Scott Cooper, what Fox wanted out of it. But yeah, I mean, definitely, as you've been mentioning, I feel, especially as a film fan, so frustrated recently with how Fox has been approaching anything that doesn't seem like it has IP potential or something that could produce like a sequel or a franchise at this point. Because like you mentioned, The Last Duel, they just kind of like dumped in October with little to no fanfare, just kind of just be like, here's the other Ridley Scott movie before House of Gucci. And before that, in 2019, 2020, there was like, hey, here's The Hidden Life, the new Terrence Malick movie. Will it get award attention? I don't know. Let's drop in December and see if happens. Nope. All right. We'll move on. And yeah, even like to some extent, I feel like The French Dispatch is kind of getting a muted release, because they're like,
they totally misjudged that. They completely, yeah. I think, you know, they could have made so much more in that opening. Like, people really wanted to see The French Dispatch and really responded to a new Wes Anderson movie, because he is that filmmaker. He has that audience, and he has an appeal. Like, people will go see a Wes Anderson movie sight unseen at this point.
Right.
And I think they definitely weren't expecting that and were taken off guard by it being such a huge hit and specialty. I think, you know, to their benefit, I think that releasing it in that way made it an indisputable hit, because of, you know, it was selling out the few screenings that it did have. I think they could have gone bigger with it. And I think that that's also kind of an instance of them not really understanding directors, because they're they are, as you say, so in the business of IP at this point and fans, that they're not really thinking about kind of directorial kind of instinct or prestige in a way.
Yeah, because I don't think anyone's walking out of Antlers being like, all right, what's Antlers 2 going to be? Where are we going to follow Jesse Plemons from here? No, I was gonna say, but like, I do wonder if like there is a version, because I don't think there's any version of this film that is like a true hit as far as like wide mainstream appeal, like critical darling, anything like that. But like, I do think there is a version of this sort of similar to The Empty Man last year, where like it's a film that comes out kind of without buzz or fanfare, but like it gains a cult following because like, oh, people really respect that there's this like long, methodical, kind of dense film that comes out that is tackling these similar sort of themes, but in a way that is a lot more thoughtful and evenly paced, I think, in a way that, you know, I mean, critical of The Empty Man as well, but I think that movie is definitely gaining a following because the studio, like, that's another 20th Century Fox film, but they let it be like 2.5. The filmmaker kind of run wild and do that film as he wants, and I feel like Antlers isn't going to have that same reputation because, like you said, it is just a compromised film at this point. They, like, no one really seems fully happy with what they got. They're just kind of just like, well, I like this part of it, or like Del Toro is just like, I got to do my weird monster things in here, and that's what I really, really wanted here. And I don't know. Yeah, it just, it's frustrating, I think, for everyone involved, but at the same time, I don't walk away from this movie feeling frustrated, weirdly, because I feel like there's enough here that I think maybe it's just because we've gotten from cinema at this point, from the studio system, but I guess I'm more grateful that we got a film like this as at least showing seeds of these types of ideas than just, like, being devout of any, like, sort of, like, thematic content, I guess, just being, like, listless, drawn out, dull movies. I guess I find myself more endeared by Antlers than others just for that reason, but yeah, like you said, it's hard to walk away from this feeling like this is like the true vision of what everyone involved wanted.
Yeah, it's I like that you're bringing up The Empty Man here, because I do feel like that's the other side of this coin, where That's a movie that, for reasons unbeknownst to me, perhaps something contractual, perhaps just, you know, lack of interest in the movie, they did end up, it was still, I think, considered a rough cut by David Pryor, the version of that movie that was released, but it did seem like he had a tighter grip on the cinematic aspects of that movie, and people are really finding it now that it's on VOD, and now that I think it's on streaming as well. People are looking at it and being like, this is like the work of a genuine artist. And with Antlers, I think similarly, you know, you can see traces of that, but I think it goes the other way in terms of a movie that he lost his battle with the studio here. Like, you know, whatever Cooper wanted this movie to kind of feel like, I think there are traces of it left. But I don't think enough kind of remains in the studio cut that people are going to be considering this an underrated horror film in years to come. I think it just, you know, it doesn't quite get there. It gets close, but I do wonder if eventually there might be some sort of restoration of maybe on like on the Blu-ray or something, if it even gets a Blu-ray release. That's an increasingly fraught question these days. But, you know, if it does, that would be the place, I think, you know, for looking at what was removed and looking at whether it actually makes the movie richer. I think, you know, with Cooper especially, I do question whether or not his version is some sort of hidden masterpiece, or if it is just like a longer, darker, more despondent version of the film that is still kind of falling into the things that some people do accuse him of, which, you know, whether that's poverty porn in Out of the Furnace and or just like kind of general kind of melodramatic kind of faux heavy flair in the case of Hostiles. I saw that criticism around it a lot, that it felt like it was a lot deeper than it actually was. And so I wonder, you know, I think that, you know, Cooper is an artist, and I think that he has his specific vision. And I don't know whether or not horror is the right vein for that. To me, it would seem on paper like a good place to explore kind of the pessimism that his films evince. But I do, you know, I'm curious. He did say that he's not done with horror yet. So perhaps his next film will answer that question for us in a way that Antlers is still kind of nagging at me about.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely walked away feeling like he was a better than I expected going into this, because when I heard like Scott Cooper was doing a horror movie, I was just kind of like, oh, okay, I guess, sure. But yeah, I mean, there's like definitely scenes, particularly towards the beginning, the cold open, where I'm like, all right, like I can get the sense of like he understands dread and atmosphere in a way that I was fairly surprised by, not enough to where I'm like scared or anything, but I feel like there is like that kind of like creepy dread throughout. Shows some respect and attention to the genre that I would like to see him explore more. A few other things I did want to mention before we wrap up that I wanted to compliment the film on was Jeremy T. Thomas' performance. He's the young kid who's basically our lead. We mentioned Kerry Russell and Jesse Plemons, but I wanted to bring him up because, I mean, as a newcomer, I thought he really did a fine job kind of finding the nuances character that I think sometimes wasn't even on the page in a way that I found really respectful and admirable. I also really enjoyed the cinematography here from, I believe his name is Florian Hofmeister. And I also love, I mean, given it's a good Guillermo del Toro movie, all the prosthetic and animatronic work. I prefer that over the CG, especially because a lot of it was pretty wonky. So the fact that they focused on that more, obviously I imagine that was Guillermo del Toro, but I think it was a benefit to the film. But ultimately, yeah, like we mentioned, I think maybe there's a road down the line where we get like the director's cut of this, and like 10 years later, people are just like, hey, have you watched it? Do you remember Antlers? You're like, no. It's like, well, there's a director's cut of it, and it's like low key amazing. And it's like, all right, well, like, sure. And I mean, I agree with you. I don't know if there's a version of this film that is like, or significantly better, but I do imagine that Cooper's version was at least a little bit more complete, or willing to kind of divulge into some of the that we were discussing in meatier, perhaps like more challenging ways that I would probably appreciate. I imagine wide audiences won't, but I guess we'll never really know, or maybe we will. That's the kind of the thing about streaming now, is that I never expected the Snyder Cut. So maybe.
Yeah. Somehow I don't think the Cooper Cut will drum up as many fans, not going to take off the internet by storm. You know, not because it's not artistically valuable, just because, you know, it doesn't have that fanfare around it, and it doesn't have the IP percentage, you know, to it that the Snyder Cut had. But, you know, I agree with you that, you know, there's a lot in Antlers that I really enjoyed. I think Jeremy T. Thomas is great in that role. I think Plemons can do no wrong, and I think he's good even in the small beats he's used in here. I think the opening is the best part of the whole movie, the way that he's lighting the mine shaft with this like kind of red flare, like this guy's like descending into hell. Like there's some fun stuff in there. And, you know, there's also like some very referential stuff in there in the creature design. I saw a lot of Alien. I saw a lot of The Thing. I think that, you know, like there's certainly, and you know, there's like a certain attention to mythology of the film that I think could have really worked for it. And I think that, you know, to crib, you know, what Cooper said to me, I think that it does work on certain levels. I think that the film has a very strong sense of place. It has a legitimately interesting creature in it. And I think the way that it's designed is beautiful. I kind of hesitate in terms of, you know, assigning responsibility, though I know that we've been doing that kind of throughout this episode. Mm-hmm. I know that this was a collaboration between Guillermo del Toro and Scott Cooper, and I'm sure that so much of the film is the result of that weird fusion of mm-hmm. both of their inputs on stuff. But I certainly think that you see that attention to creaturedom and to creature design. And you see that attention to setting. I think that both of them have strengths that they bring to the table here. And I really wonder where the film runs into the kind of the trouble of being unsatisfying in the way that it is. And a lot of that to me feels like the impetus of making it 99 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the legacy of this film is. Ultimately, similar to you, I remember when I was talking, were like, oh, I thought that came out already, because this was filmed in like 2018. Trailers were coming out in 2019. And I think a lot of people just assumed this was already out when the pandemic happened. So I don't know if this finds an audience. Like we said, I think it has like, it made $5 million at this point. And I think the budget was closer to 20, maybe even higher at this point. So yeah, not a film that's really getting praised, as I was telling you before. The Rotten Tomatoes score is also, I guess, more middling than anything. It's at 60. And audience score is actually surprisingly high. It's at 69%. So I was expecting it to be flipped. Like, audience would be lower on the film. Critics might be a little higher. But I don't know.
It's interesting evidence for your... I think that we were talking about this at the beginning, but some people are a little bit less positive on Cooper in the critical community. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people do kind of think that he can kind of veer into pretension in terms of his focus on these very dark corners of the country and his sort of attention to that. But I think that, you know, in the theater, like especially not really having that context necessarily for knowing Scott Cooper's previous work, I think it's effective in a horror mold to kind of create this version of the country that is conducive to that kind of misery and that kind of dread and terror. I think that can be a lot when you're, you know, making a film that's adapted from real history, for example. Mm-hmm. I think Black Mass is a cruel movie in a lot of ways. It's a really dark, cruel movie. And, you know, as someone who's from Boston and kind of knew a lot about the Whitey Bulger stuff going in, I think that people who lived through that are not going to be in any way comforted by the film. Not that that's necessarily its goal, but his films are not cuddly. And his films, I certainly think, hold you at arm's length, as you mentioned, in a way that I'm curious to see more of. I think that he's someone who I have no... I have like an admiration for his filmmaking. And I think that people who are kind of dismissing him are kind of just sort of ending a conversation where it should be starting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And yeah, I mean, do you have anything else you wanted to say about Sinners before we wrap up?
No, I think we about covered it. Thank you for being willing to kind of dive into it. I haven't really talked to anyone about Antlers.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why.
Yeah.
I'm glad we could actually have like a pretty like thoughtful, in-depth conversation about a movie that I feel like a lot of people are somewhat unfairly dismissing in a way that, you know, I can kind of understand, but at the same time, I think there, like we said, I think there's a lot to dive in here that's interesting, certainly as far as like artistic vision and what I guess Scott Cooper really wants to do, especially since he continues to get a lot of these big gigs in a way that powerful connections. I think he will, you know, I don't think he has burned all of his bridges yet, but at the same time, it does kind of feel like he's striving, is not really in the vein of whatever the studios want from movies at this point. And that's something I just find inherently kind of fascinating, a filmmaker right now. But
I will say that, you know, to his credit, and, you know, we won't spoil the ending for people who haven't seen the film. It does end on a very grim, dark note that, like, kind of becomes more horrifying the more you think about it as you kind of leave the theater. At least for me, I was like, oh, wait, so this cycle is continuing in a way. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, this is something that is in line with the film's kind of despondency about the state of affairs for its characters and for its setting. There's like a lot about addiction and a lot about kind of passing down trauma that I think in terms of what we're talking about of someone perhaps not being able to completely protect their artistic vision from studio mandated cuts and the difficulties of collaborating with someone whose sensibilities are quite different than yours, I'm still, you know, impressed in a way that Cooper got away with an ending that quite succinctly makes his thematic case. If it is a slightly unsatisfying narrative conclusion, I think thematically where he chooses to end Antlers makes a lot of sense for the movie that he set out to make.
Yeah, I mean, there, like you said, even though the movie is compromised, there is stuff in the movie that I'm actually generally kind of surprised he got away with. Like stuff like that, where there is that ambiguity in a very dark and mournful way. And also, like you see children die in this. You said the, like, thorns of addiction in, like, very, like, upfront and unsettling ways. And, yeah, I mean, it's, I can't imagine, like, how much darker the original film was. But, I mean, the fact that he got away with this much suggests that, you know, Cooper really wants to get in the thick of it with his films in a way that I at least find somewhat, why it turns some people off or why they feel like this isn't really the stories we need right now. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to also not look at the pandemic lens and like seeing the ending like that is even darker when you know what world you're going to come out of when you leave the theater and stuff like that. Yeah. Well, I think that's about all I have to say about
Antlers.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Isaac, for making the time to talk about it.
Thanks for having me, Will.
Yeah. I'm glad we're like maybe the only two people in the podcasting realm to talk about this movie yet. but we'll see.
Yeah. Maybe we'll start a movement, you know?
Yeah. We'll see.
Certainly always a pleasure, Will. Thank you for having me on. And, you know, hopefully we'll feel more ecstatic about the next one.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, until then.
All right. Thanks, Will.
Thank you so much for listening to our show. Be sure to subscribe to Cinemaholics on your favorite podcast app of choice or find us on YouTube. See you all next time.